Hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Grilling JR with the voice of professional wrestling. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. How are you, JR? What's going on, man?
Good, man. Good. Getting ready for Thanksgiving tomorrow. A little improv. It's always an improv when you're a single guy. So I'm looking forward to this week and some good food, some football, and just pretty much normal guy stuff.
It's going to be a fun week for football and, of course, for wrestling. Of course, as folks are listening to this, AEW Dynamite was last night in Chicago. Got a big show coming up this weekend, Collision in Pittsburgh. Tickets are on sale now, AEWTIX.com. I guess we should just start right off at the top, man. What an incredible pay-per-view it was this past weekend, Full Gear. Not one without a little bit of controversy. It was a polarizing match. It was maybe the ultimate death match in the history of American pay-per-view. Hangman and Swerve. What'd you think, Jim?
It was a lot of drama, a lot of physicality. They raised the bar, as I tweeted out, as the match is going on, those type matches, those hardcore type matches. It reminded me a lot of, an old ECW show or matches and the moveset, the violence, I guess. It was a hell of a performance for those guys. And I'm proud of both their efforts. Whether you like the hardcore style or you don't like the hardcore style, the one thing you cannot do is to criticize the efforts and the work rate of the talents. That was covered. So, but there are a lot of really good matches on that pay-per-view. I watched it on my iPad here in Jacksonville and thought it was just a smashing hit for what I saw. I knew what it was going to be like. And it was exactly like I thought it was going to be. I don't want to sound like, oh, I know everything.
Right.
I just thought that the whole crew delivered, and it was hard because, you know, the management of the blood unique. So it was a challenge for the talents to follow what they're following. So, but nonetheless, I thought they pulled it off very well. They should be proud of their efforts. And, so nonetheless, it was a fun show to watch. And I think that as usual, for whatever reason, AEW always seems to deliver in the, in crunch time with these pay-per-view shows. It's uncanny how the guys rise to the occasion and they pull this thing off, and they certainly pulled it off, in California.
Well, one of the other big announcements that Tony Khan had been teasing, we got a question about from Two Count Kyle, as we're doing a very special Thanksgiving Day edition of Ask JR Anything. And our pal Two Count Kyle, who can always count on to bring some good questions, says, Jim, who do you think will be Will Ospreay's first opponent in AEW? And who are you most looking forward to seeing him go up against?
Well, you know, everybody wants to see somebody wrestle Bryan Danielson. And I think that would be at the top of my list, but the roster is getting thicker with talented workers and getting more populated with excellent workers. So it's hard to say, you know, it could be a Bryan Danielson. It could be some Kenny Omega. It could be, I'll think of it here in a second, but nonetheless, there's a lot of talents. That's why I'm kind of not confused, but I'm muddled here, but I think that, there's a lot of guys. Jericho, I was trying to say, there's just so many candidates to work with the Ospreay, and, not just everybody can work with him because of his uniqueness, but, there's a lot of matches I would like to book if I was doing that and give it a roll and see what's happening. So, it's going to be fun going forward, no doubt, because there's just a lot of guys are lining up to work with Ospreay because he's so good and so different. So, it'll be a nice attraction when he starts, and, I'm hoping to be able to call some of those matches.
Bryant has a great question about video games. He wants to know, when adding your voice to video games, how much ad libbing were you allowed? Did they normally hand you a script of what they wanted, or could you bring in your own things to say?
Well, they gave me a script to, as a guideline, even in WWE did the same thing, but they gave us the, when Lawler and I were doing them, they gave us the opportunity and the chance to do more ad-libbing. As long as we stay within the theory of the storylines, we could be ourselves a little bit more. So, you get a little freedom, and that's good, because it doesn't make you feel like you're tied down to something. You still tell the same story. You still travel the same road. It's just the fact that, you know, you gotta be, that puts everybody on the same page. I probably, in all honesty, looked at my notes a little bit more than Lawler, cause he's a freewheeler, and, but we still successfully did some amazing video games with still some lofty numbers, to our credit.
Mark Jackson has a great question about Jerry. He wants to know, when did you first get to work behind the mic with Jerry, and how long was it before you realized you had the signature chemistry that defined the Attitude Era? Did you guys know you had chemistry right away?
We kind of felt something was different. Yeah. Wasn't something we were expecting, because I worked with Lawler the first time in Mid-South Wrestling. He came in with Jerry Jarrett to talk to Cowboy about a talent trade, of which was consummated, and some famous names were brought in and some famous names left. But it was an opportunity for these two promoters to cooperate, which is unusual in the wrestling business. So, but I think right away we had a feel that this could be really good. Sure enough, it was.
David Garcia has a question about commentary, specifically about Gino. He says, JR was the voice of my adolescence, Gorilla Monsoon, the voice of my childhood. JR spoken fondly of Gino. I don't think he gets his just due as an announcer. What's his take on Monsoon's play by play with Jesse Ventura and Bobby the Brain Heenan?
They were excellent. They were really excellent. Monsoon could work with anybody. As long as you remembered and understood that he's in the lead, just follow. When I first started doing commentary in WWE, Monsoon and I did a lot of Wrestling Challenge, one of the syndicated shows. We did a lot of work there, hours of work to kind of perfect our game. But it also, much like Lawler, came around quickly, because Gorilla was so fundamentally sound. He had great product knowledge. He had no issues making his partner look good or participate in the commentary. So, it was, a fun experience. And you know, I've been in the business 19 years when I got to WWE in 93. It was an adventure, because I've been used to working with some of the same guys more often than not. And this gave me a chance to spread my wings a little bit and learn from the greats. You know, watching Heenan work with Monsoon was a great education for me. Their timing, their comedic input, all those things. So they were, that was really important to me. And I got two great friends out of it. They're both no longer with us. I hate to say, but it's true. But I had a great time working with those guys. They were so unselfish. They were very professional. They took me under their wing and kept giving me knowledge, and I kept accepting it and learning it. So, it was a fun experience, to say the least. I couldn't be where I am today if I hadn't had the opportunity to work with Monsoon and Heenan at various points in my WWE run.
We had a great question, you know, about WrestleMania, because I know that was your first shot with WWE, was calling WrestleMania with Gorilla. And Sean Brown wants to know, with WWE being a truly global product, do you think WrestleMania could bring in more money as a broadcast as opposed to a premium live event stream they do with Peacock? The advertising they could sell during commercial breaks would be right up there with a Super Bowl. That's something I've never really thought about, but that's an interesting idea. The idea that, you know, it could become a broadcast ratings juggernaut. I don't think it would rival the Super Bowl, but boy, it would get quite an audience. Like, as you and I are recording this, past Monday night, we had a rematch from the Super Bowl, the Eagles versus the Chiefs. 28.9 million people watched that Monday Night Football affair.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see what kind of rating a WrestleMania would get. Do you think that's possible with the way the landscape has continued to change?
I guess it's possible, Connie, if there's enough, if this decision was made to go that direction and rebuild their model. But WWE has given a lot of thought, forethought to this concept, and it seems to be working for them. Their numbers are good. The bottom line numbers are excellent. So it seems like they have a formula right now that works, and I don't look for them to change that anytime soon.
Great follow-up question, sort of in that same vein of WrestleMania. Sandy wants to know, are there any wrestlers who have retired that you wish you would have been able to call their last match? Like Austin at WrestleMania 38 or Undertaker at WrestleMania 36. And conversely, are there any active wrestlers you'd like to call their last match?
Oh, there's a lot of them. You know, there's a lot of them that I would like to have the honor of calling their last match. I don't sleep on it too much. I don't worry about it because it's out of my control. But sure, I would have liked to have called some of the matches of the guys that were getting ready to hang it up. It's good. The tribute to them is something that announcers always, I think, look forward to. It's a compliment. It's an honor. And, you know, I've had a lot of the talents come to go to Vince and say, we want JR to call our match. And I look at that as something very, very special. So, you know, you'd like to think that although some of those guys I signed would be a short list, how I feel about them personally and to be able to call their last match. You know, do you ever really know when it's somebody's last match? That's one thing about it. If it was all conclusive and you knew that somebody was going to be, having their last go round, sure. It's interesting. And, but that just doesn't seem to be the fit right now, but I'd love to do that. And, but it's just not in the cards because I'm working for AEW and happily so. I'll get me a new list when the AEW guys start getting a little bit older and some of them start thinking about hanging it up. That's probably when I'll focus on that question a little bit more.
Well, I'll tell you, it sure would be special to think about you and Tony Schiavone perhaps calling Sting's last match. We know that is on the horizon, and to think about that first clash of the champions, you and Tony doing that together would have been pretty awesome. Actually, speaking of Tony, Martin has a question that says, isn't it cool that you and Tony Schiavone are still working at a high level after all these years? I love you guys' work.
Well, I like to think it's because we're pretty decent at what we do.
Yep.
And, we're still actively involved in, our own announcing creative. We're allowed to work, freely. And, that's a great thing as a broadcaster because you're out there on an island. And, so you never know what the future's going to hold. Hell, who knew I was going to be doing the AEW a few years ago? You know, when I left WWE the last time, it seemed like that, well, that was a fun run. And then all of a sudden here we are again in the thick of it. And, which I do enjoy doing. It's a different path. It's a different routing. It's a different sound and it's a different talent base. So, I'm happy with what I've been doing. I want to get healthy, obviously. And bring it full circle.
Great question here from Nick. What was your favorite match you ever announced? Now, I think that might be too broad, Jim. So let's break it down. What was your favorite Mid-South match? Does one stick out above all the others?
Well, there are several, when Dr. Death got the title, there was a series of matches involving him and, Big Boss Man and Terry Gordy and One Man Gang that I enjoyed because they were violent, they're physical, and, they were just fun as hell to call. big men beating the hell out of each other and telling a good story is what you found in that equation. I think, WCW, I don't know. There's a lot of really good stuff that's kind of been forgotten, but some of that stuff with, you know, we had a program there with Flair and DiBiase that was stellar. But you know, there's a lot of real good ones, and you know, sometimes I have to go back and review the ones that were made the all-star list, because there were plenty of them. And, those are what creates the great memories and helps contribute to somebody's legacy.
What about a WCW match? Do you have a favorite WCW match you called?
Yeah. Flair and Steamboat.
Mm.
There were three of them and they were awesome. All three were awesome. They told a different story in each match. They, meaning Rick and Ricky. And I will always remember those matches as three of the very best, not only that I ever called, but I ever saw. So, those stand out for sure.
Ari has a great question. Great friend of the show. Always bringing the good questions. The oil bust in the mid South is cited as the reason that the cowboy had to sell the UWF, one of the last territories that drew money. Do you think the territories fighting the WWF invasion was futile?
Well, in hindsight, it was. In hindsight, it was, certainly. We didn't think so at the very moment. We thought we could air it out and last it out, but we were wrong. We kept still trying to put out good matches and good shows, and our TV ratings are still amazing. But we just didn't have the working capital financially to make it work. And there's just no disposable income. You know, we were getting double digit ratings, in these markets that we were in, but, we didn't have the money to perpetuate it. And that was because of the huge amount of unemployment in our territory. It just, the business model changed drastically, and every tick that, went downward, it was another day of challenge. So, that's when I sought out the Crocketts and ended up selling the company to Jimmy and family. So, but that was the deal. We had the same talents. We had good talents. It's just crazy. So, yeah, the economy and the oil boom, the oil bust, where everything was so dependent upon the oil business and petroleum, issues that, you know, it took the bat out of our hands.
Interesting question here from, Thomas. He says, Jim, if the good Lord said you're not done yet, but I'm going to pause everything and you'll be the sole booker of any promotion, past or present, which one would you choose? Let me add a little wrinkle to that though, Jim. Let's say it's a place you didn't work. So we won't pick WCW. We won't pick the WWF. We won't pick AEW. We might not even pick Mid-South, but of the old territory days, and I guess we could throw in, you know, New Japan or TNA or whatever. Is there one promotion that you always sort of thought, man, it would have been cool to work there? And
yeah, Florida.
Okay.
Eddie, learning under Eddie Graham would have been a treat and a gift. The weather, the driving territory, more often than not, you're in a car, not an airplane. So yeah, I think, Florida would have been a nice opportunity to try to get better at your pro wrestling skill sets.
Joshua Culver wants to know, does JR have a collection of his action figures? You've had more than one action figure over the years, Jim. Do you have all your action figures?
I don't think so, Conrad. I'm embarrassed to say that, but I don't think I do. The ones I have, the newest one from AEW is a really cool piece, and we've got them signed and available for shipping, at, jrsbarbecue.com. So, but I don't have all that stuff. In my younger days, I tried to collect about everything. As I got older, I collected less. I think that's just the human nature of the situation. But I wish in hindsight I had collected everything that came out on JR. It just, you know, life and business and work and things like that change things. And my memorabilia collection changed over time as well. I'd like to get back into that mode. And, you know, sometimes when I make these appearances, which I'm getting ready, as soon as I'm healthy, which will be sooner than later, I'll be able to get back in the hunt, making some appearances. So when I go to these appearances, sometimes I see items I don't have, so I buy them. And, you know, it just, but you kind of get out of that mode. You're hurrying and hurrying and making a flight and all these things. So, I kind of got out of that mode, but I'm getting back into that mode now because the merchandise is just so much cleaner and cooler. So, I wish I had done that earlier, quite frankly.
I know we normally, have a conversation about all this at the end of the program, but I think we should just remind everybody right now, man, you've got the ultimate stocking stuffer selection right now over at jrsbbq.com. Something for everybody. Whether you're looking for that main event mustard or that Chipotle ketchup, two different types of barbecue sauce, we got Red Ass JR's hot sauce. And who could forget my favorite, the all purpose seasoning. But as you mentioned, action figures, trading cards, oh my, it's all at jrsbbq.com. Tell us about it, Jim.
Well, we got a lot of items. We got food items, obviously, as you can see on the screen, if you're watching, cutting boards, action figures, signed, tops, cards, all kinds of stuff, you know, plus our traditional roster of, sauces and hot sauce and things of that nature. So, we've expanded our inventory more than I, quite frankly, when we started this, I didn't think we'd have this many products. So we got a great selection. Or just about anybody in the family. And whether you're looking for something that tastes good, food is a great item to gift. So, you know, check that out as an idea. But you're right, stocking stuffers is right down our alley. And if you got a wrestling fan in your family and you want to get them something that's a personal gift, all these products you see on the screen make good selections. So, but I had last night, cause my blood sugar has gone crazy and I'm trying to get it under control. It's not under control right now. My blood pressure, my blood sugar is around 400.
Oh,
and that's dangerous. That's diabetic seizure time. And that's why I'm doing so much medical work. It seemed like every day I got some appointment with some specialist and, So I'm working hard on that. I started doing insulin injections, on Monday. So that's supposed to help it. And, giving yourself a shot every night is unique, different. But boy, thank God the medicines have improved and the nature of getting that insulin in your system is, really vital. And I didn't think I'd get to that point where I'd have to take shots every day, but that's where I am. And I'm happy to do it because it's going to save my life.
Well, damnation, we're pulling for you, Jim. Hope that gets under control. My goodness.
It will. It got to. That's my thought.
Let's talk about some old wrestling here. Let's try to have a little fun. Sean Collis wants to know, any truth you were looking to sign Gary Albright from the UWFI? His Takata feud was awesome. We haven't spent a lot of time talking about Gary on the program over the years.
Big rough guy, big tough guy. Certainly a guy that, deserved recognition. I think Gary wrestled as an amateur at Nebraska. So he had a good background, big rugged dude, durable, it seemed like. So yeah, we had an interest in him, but what would you would have there, is a situation where guys could, they could make a good living working part time. That sounds familiar with AEW to me, which is a talent's dream because you get, if you choose to, you get to establish a home life. And, So a lot of those guys did that, and they were hard to recruit because they were already on the road. They were already established. They could heal up off their tours because their style of wrestling was so different and so physical that, you needed some healing time. And that was why it was so hard to get Doc and Gordy and Hansen and Brody and some of those dudes who had those huge Japanese deals working part time. So, but yeah, Gary Albright was always on my short list of guys I wanted to recruit. Big bull. He's a big bull. A lot like Vader, you know, just big, rugged, and seemed to be durable based on his schedule there.
Great question about the current AEW roster here. Dan the Don wants to know, who is an AEW wrestler that's got it that nobody is talking about?
Man, I don't know. Everybody's talking about somebody, it seems like, Connie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know who that would be. There's a lot of them that I take for granted because I see them so often. But in reality, there's several guys. That's a great thing about the AEW roster, all shapes and sizes and age groups, age and demographics, sitting in a pretty good spot right now. It seems to me like is the Tony Khan's roster. We'll see who evolves, who develops, who continues to develop. That may be more important, who continues to develop. And we got a lot of candidates for that role.
Darren Staley has a great question that I know is going to help us sell some hot sauce too. Let's talk about giving you the red ass here. What misinformed narrative or thoughtless hot take gives JR the old red ass the most?
Oh, heck, I don't know. There's always some rumor going out there. Then the more you hear it, the more you believe it to be true, which isn't true. But that's just the nature of the internet beast. Everybody's got a story to tell. Everybody's got a case they want to plead. So, it's hard to pick out one because they're crazy. They're all over the place. So, look, you hear it in the NFL, you hear it everywhere. Who's going to be the quarterback of the Jets? Who's going to be this? Who's going to do that? And that's what you have. And that's just the nature of the beast in this, internet world. And it's going to do nothing but increase, in my opinion, over time, because that's just, again, the nature of the beast, whether no matter what your occupation or what your vocation is, you can expect to find some dirt, on these searches, but you know, you got them. So you just deal with it. Don't take it too seriously.
Interesting question about multitasking from Matt. How difficult is it when during a match, Gorilla may want you guys to promote the main event while the match is going on, when you're trying to not completely bury or disregard the match that's happening in the ring at the time? Like WWE had you guys do this all the time. You'd be talking about so-and-so was trending here and we've got this new promotion coming up and here's our main event storyline, and oh, the big pay-per-view's coming up. Meanwhile, the guys in the ring are working their ass off, and we're just not paying very much attention to that.
Yeah, that's a problem for me. You got to pick your spots.
Yes.
Hammer locks, overhand wrist locks, stationary movement, all those things fit into your answer to your question there. So, I don't know. You got to pay attention to the product. It's like saying the ball is on the 25-yard line and people are driving for a touchdown and you're talking about what's going to be happening at halftime. It's not good. It takes your mind off the game, mind off the prize. I never liked that. I think we should have been more selective. And when we promote a match or still to come tonight or next week or whatever, we needed to be more selective. And then when you hear somebody in your headset say, promote the match, you know, they didn't want you to wait. Vince wants it right then, right now. So, you do what you're told, but you also try to use a little bit of common sense and not take somebody completely out of the mood in the mode of listening to a wrestling match.
Interesting question here from Stuart Brody. And this is about one of the most famous matches in history. I think it's Cody's favorite match of all time. He wants to know, in the Rock Hogan match at WrestleMania 18, did you pre-plan the line? He beat Andre the Giant with that move after the leg drop, or did it just come to you in the moment? It was an unforgettable moment made legendary with your call.
Well, thank you. No, I didn't forecast that line. It just happened. It worked. It's memorable. We're talking about it today, all these years later.
Yeah.
So, you just roll with it. You know, it was one of those lines that popped in my head. Seemed like it fit. It seemed like it fit the moment, which is the most important thing. I didn't weasel it in. But I did the line because I felt like it worked and it was relatable. So, because we didn't have a lot of material prepared. I don't think Lawler ever had a lot of material prepared. But you just got to go with the flow and find something that you can tie together, find something that's germane to the topic. And, that's what we were looking for. That's what I was looking for. And we found a line here and there that seemed like it worked in that match. That match is going to be talked about and remembered for years. And I'm glad I got a chance to be a part of it.
Interesting question from Chance Richardson, who happens to be in digital marketing. So he's always a forward thinking fellow. Yeah. He says, good old JR, where do you see the wrestling business 10 years from now? Do you see augmented or virtual reality playing a role? Now this sounds like a sci-fi question, Jim, but to be clear, Apple has already announced some sort of Google's glasses contraption. And a lot of people are thinking, hey man, that's what Oculus Rift tried to be like a decade ago. And because it's an Apple product, it might be widely adopted and have some studio heads and things like that start creating content for it. Do you think there is that in our future where we're all wearing these headsets and feel like we're in the arena?
Well, it could be because, you know, there's things happening right now digitally that I didn't foresee in my lifetime, but it's there. So I hate to predict what's not going to happen because we see now that digitally there's no limits. Who knows how it's going to change, but I do believe change is en route. So we'll see how that works out, but I can't see things staying status quo. I see things getting better, and improving. So, you know, we'll see where it all ends up. It's going to end up someplace different than it is today.
Let's talk about what if. Dylan Leahy has an interesting question. Would Jim have ever thought about broadcasting baseball had wrestling not worked out, or was it always going to be wrestling or football?
Well, football was my first love, and I did a little football along the way. Baseball would have been fun. You know, Shivani's a great baseball announcer. He loves the game, and takes it very seriously. He's a data guy, stat guy. But, I go back sometimes to listen to some old baseball games, and the stories they tell are just tremendous. And Shivani would fit in that role real well. I could do baseball, but it would take a good producer and a research person, and let's see where it lands. So yeah, I think a broadcaster just likes broadcasting. And if you got a special love, like I do football, and Shivani does baseball, then there you are. So, hey, who's to say I'm not going to do baseball somewhere? Who's to say that somebody's going to say, hey, we got a streaming scenario and we know you umpired baseball for 20 years. You're a fan of the game, et cetera, et cetera. And that's where we're going to leave that deal. So, I don't know. It's hard to say. I stopped eliminating everything that I thought at one time I would be doing. And, because I just don't know how to predict the future. Who knows?
Another great sports question here from Brent Barnett. He's got a question about Skip Bayless. Has JR ever had any interactions with Skip Bayless? I think both are from Oklahoma and both are a part of Sooner Faithful. Also, yep. Has JR ever had a chance to call an OU football game?
I haven't had a chance to call an OU football game, except in my mind. I've called a lot of them. I have since I was a kid, because I grew up as a kid of the radio era. So the theater of the mind, radio, audio, whatever you want, however you want to term it, was always in play for me. Skip Bayless, I've met Skip a time or two. He was very nice to me because of our Oklahoma heritage, and was very respectful. I know that he's very controversial on his TV show, but I think that's part of the character that he plays. But he's smart. He's a smart guy. And he's got great contacts and instincts. So, I'm a Skip Bayless fan in that regard. There's a lot of real good morning people. The thing about Skip is that he's probably, of all the guys that are on TV in that time frame, he's probably one of the guys that allows his partners to talk, and they don't talk over each other incessantly.
Yeah.
So Skip, he's in his 70s, still making big money, and he's got a great audience. So, but who knows? I'd like to be on his show sometime.
Adam wants to know, during your time working in Louisiana, did you order many drive-through daiquiris? If so, did you have a favorite daiquiri flavor? Also, are you a fan of crawfish?
Crawfish better than I like daiquiris, Conrad, to be honest with you. They're a little sweet for me. I've gotten everything through a drive-through. Alligator tails, all kinds of food. If you're in Louisiana and you can't find food, you're in trouble.
There's part of the country, though, part of the world, maybe, that can't believe that there are essentially drive-through liquor stores, but they exist in Florida and Louisiana and parts of the South.
Right.
And I think, as best I can recall, I think the rule is they just put a little piece of tape over the straw hole because they're encouraging you to wait until you get home. And you don't reckon anybody's ever pulled that tape back and just put the straw right in, do you?
I reckon they have.
Dang it. That's not the original plan,
All right.
Francis Reyes wants to know, do you have a favorite clothing item besides, the trusty old hat that brings up good memories? Maybe something Jan got you or something you've had a long time ago.
I wear, black jeans a lot. So my wardrobe is pretty basic. Black pants, a regular shirt. The hat's the calling card. And for a while there, I was wearing, Nike Jordans, red and black Jordans. I keep thinking sometimes, where the hell are those shoes? They might be worth something nowadays. And they're very comfortable. So that was kind of a part of a black and red ensemble.
Yep.
That I wore. And, so the shoes are very important to that equation. So, but the hat's still the topper, no pun intended.
Frank wants to know, what did you think of the Roddy Piper Gold Dust match at WrestleMania 12? Of course, this was an interesting match where I think part of it was pre-taped. And then they did the cutaway with the silly OJ chase. And then the match wound up inside the arena. We would see Roddy strip down Goldust and see that he had some ladies negligee underneath from Fredericks of Hollywood. It was quite a spectacle, but it might not have been your cup of tea. I know you love the hard hitting brawl and the action, but yeah. The idea that it was a stop and start and the silly OJ stuff in the middle. What'd you think of that?
Well, I have mixed reviews. When they finally came into the arena, it kind of gave me a life preserver, and it certainly gave a relief to the fans because the fans were excited. They're getting to see some action in front of them instead of on a big screen. But I thought it was a good presentation. Dustin worked his ass off. So did Roddy. It was a different kind of match for both of them. They both roasted the occasion and delivered. And I remember after that match was over, Roddy came up to me and said, what'd you think, champ? Everybody's champ. What'd you think, champ? I said, I thought it was great. I enjoyed the hell out of it. And, he said, what are you guys going to do with that Bronco? And I said, hell, I don't have a clue. Why, what's on your mind? And I said, what are you thinking about? And he said, well, if the old man's not going to use it, I'd like to have it. I said, let me see what I can do about that. So soon thereafter, I go to Vince backstage during the show's ongoing, and he acquiesced. He said, give him the car. So I go to Roddy and I say, you know, we'll shift the car up to you. Oh, no, no, I don't want that to happen. I want to drive it. So the car, the Bronco that Roddy was in was the same Bronco that we gave Roddy as a additional thank you, in addition to his payroll, payday. So I guess that Bronco is still floating around someplace, but, you know, Vince is very nice to, you know, it's a Hall of Fame-like matter. It's a Hall of Fame-like gimmick. And Vince is happy to give that to Roddy. And Roddy was so pleased that he got a new car out of it that he drove from California back up to Oregon.
Man, that's so interesting to me. You were doing the payoffs in that era. That wouldn't have affected Roddy's pay?
No.
Well,
that wouldn't have been fair. That would have been somebody looking to pinch pennies, Conrad. It didn't work.
Vince did a lot of that. I mean, Shane Douglas has been on record as saying they wanted him to go get a new shirt for a promo. So they sent a guy out to get a shirt. It was like a polo button up, nothing super fancy, but you know, a nice shirt. And then when he got his stub, it was deducted from the paycheck.
Wow. So I wouldn't wear that.
So the idea that we're dinging guys for a polo, but gifting other guys a vehicle is, well, I guess it's Roddy Piper.
And it's Vince.
Yes.
Vince is a little eccentric. Hello.
Yeah.
Roddy, a little eccentric. Hello. They both were made happy.
Yep.
So I feel like I did my job.
Oh, no doubt.
Two of the key guys in that whole equation, found themselves with some more gimmicks, gifts, so to speak. And I was glad that all I did was facilitate it.
Right.
I'm just the guy that went to Vince and said, hey, Roddy's interested in the Bronco. Do you want to sell it to him? And I knew when I said to him, meaning Vince, pronoun boy, that, he wanted it as a gift.
Yeah.
As a thank you. As an acknowledgement for his contributions. And they did beat the shit out of each other. And we also knew that Roddy's tenure was somewhat limited at his age and health status and so forth and so on. So it was one of the nicer things we got to do for somebody. And I'm glad that we did. I'll always remember that conversation with Roddy, the conversation with Vince, and then awarding Roddy the car, the Bronco, that he was childlike. He thought it was just the coolest thing in the world. So if he was happy and Vince was happy, hell, I'm happier than hell.
Do you remember there being another time in history? Because there's been so many fun, quote-unquote, vehicles over the years on WWE programming. Do you remember a time where you guys gave someone else a vehicle? Maybe Stone Cold got a monster truck or whatever the hell.
I'm sure there were those opportunities, Conrad, but I don't recall one specifically. But I know if I had to go back with a gun to my head, there would be other things, you know. Austin seemed like he got something somewhere down the road. It might've been a pickup, but Vince is just good about that kind of stuff. You know, Vince's theory was, well, we've used this vehicle and we're not going to use it anymore. It's just done. The gimmick's over. We're moving on with more creative. And that, we had that scenario. So I just don't remember specifics. But Vince is very willing to, very generous. I'm sure a lot of the talents would tell you the same thing. He was very generous with his ability to gift and make talent happy in a special way.
Let's talk about royalties here for a minute. FF Handbook has such a great question about merch. He says, let's say an individual talent gets a dollar royalty for a shirt. Would a four person stable each get $1 or each get 25 cents? Is it split evenly based off of star power? Like, would an X-Pac royalty be the same as a Triple H royalty for DX stuff? What about short-term or former members? That's an interesting question because we've talked to Eric Bischoff before, and as he understood it, when the NWO went back to the WWF, they continued to pay royalties for the NWO to Hulk Hogan, Scott Hall, and Kevin Nash. Of course, Eric Bischoff didn't participate in that. He was not a part of that, but how does that break down? Were you ever involved in that? Can you shed any light on the math and the way you guys arrived at those numbers?
I think that the way that I would describe that is that if you have a basic number for royalties, in other words, the percentage that you get from the merchandise sales still existed. If they had, you had four guys getting paid off one garment or one item, like a collection of action figures, then you split it. So everybody got a little piece of the pie. And certainly the pie was the larger piece of the pie, based on units sold. It sounds complicated, but it really isn't. So you got four guys in the NWO, let's say, and their royalties are coming due. So what do? Well, this item is sold X number. You get a certain percentage based on the house rules. And so now you got another number. So that number then is divided by how many people are on the creative. So X-Pac's a good illustration. He had, he was a support player, but he was on the team pitcher, shall we say. And we just, that's how that worked. He paid everybody that was, involved, and it worked out pretty good. You know, nobody's going to be completely happy with the royalties. They're happy when they sign their contract, and then they're not so happy when they get their royalty check, because everybody always underestimates how much the royalty check is going to be. So, and the way you make your big money is that you're the only person, like a Stone Cold action figure. So it's just simple math, really. And I didn't really have too many guys complaining about it. A lot of them, like I said, the most common feeling, Connie, was guys thought that they should be paid more because they didn't do any math before the release of their money for the royalty. It didn't change. It wasn't a brother-in-law deal. It was shared equally if it needed to be. And, but by and large, it was just new money for the talents. You know, WWE had the most refined, royalty system in all of pro wrestling for forever. And, that's kind of how we settled that thing. It really wasn't a settlement. It was just common sense and how that thing worked out.
And I want to let you know that even though Thanksgiving is right upon us, we will be back next week talking about all things Christian. What an incredible run Christian has been on this year in AEW. He's been doing it all with Nick Wayne, and I can't wait to see what's next for Christian. But we're going to take a look in the rearview mirror, talk about his time teaming with Edge, his first singles run. And of course, we're going to touch on his time in AEW as well. By the way, if your business targets men 25 to 54 years old, no better place to advertise than right here with us. We've had some of the same sponsors for years, and that's because it really works. If you're looking for those dudes, man, we got them. Check it out at advertisewithjr.com. Jim, let's do a couple more and then we'll wrap this one up. Ray wants to know, how did you feel putting over things like Mr. Socko? Is that a little too cartoony for you, or did you dig it?
I dug the fact that I had a job.
Okay.
I dug the fact that I was there to enhance talent, which is every announcer's goal, enhance the talent, the storylines, get people tuned in. And, so I didn't really have a big issue. I might not have liked it before the show, I mean, I said, well, you know, I don't know about that, but you got to let it play out, because there have been times when I could say, well, this is not going to work, and it did. So, you know, dude loves a good example. He had things working in his favor for for over a year, just changing character set. And in the beginning, I didn't know that was even going to work. I had no idea what a dude love is. I knew who it was.
Right.
But I didn't know how he was going to perform. So it was, you just do your job. It's like, I equate a lot of things to football. I apologize for that if it offends anybody. But the bottom line is that, you know, you got a job to do. And, you know, if getting dude love over is going to help the Mick Foley family, for example, then let's do it. Let's do it and not be so selfish and, where it's not all about the announcer. It's all about the talent. So that's kind of how I saw it. It might not be my cup of tea, but you're not going to know it from the commentary.
Zach Neal has a great question, and I think I might know the answer, but I'm curious to hear if maybe there's a different one. I find it surprising that never once in the history of WrestleMania has a world title match been a ladder match. In your time, was that idea ever discussed? Was it something that was deliberately avoided? And if so, why?
I don't think it was ever avoided. We had ladder matches at WrestleMania, you know, the TLC matches were certainly would be considered without question. But I don't think there was any boycott of a ladder match at WrestleMania. It all depended on who was hot, who the talents were. In other words, the night that we did the TLC match, the three-way, who else could have done that better than the guys that were in the ring?
Nobody.
Hardys, Dudleys, and Edge and Christian. And who do you put in those spots that is going to outperform those dudes? I don't know of anybody. So, that's an interesting question. And I'm sure somewhere down the road, maybe this year, who knows? You'll have a scenario where the ladder match fits the talent to fit the moment at WrestleMania.
Michael has a great question about something we're all going to be talking about a month from today. Is JR going to check out the film The Iron Claw? And does JR have any stories about his interactions with the Von Erich family?
I had a lot of interactions with the Von Erich family. I didn't necessarily get along great with Fritz, because Fritz is a lot like Cowboy, his way or the highway, and they were partners. So I kind of let Bill handle all that stuff with Fritz. I think my age, the fact that I wasn't a wrestler, adversely affected my relationship with Fritz. So, but you know, I don't hold that against him. A lot of guys did that to me. And I just kept moving on in the direction I was in. So I had the Von Erich kids were so talented offensively, but they were offensive. But I just didn't, I had some issues with them. The drug and alcohol use was, harmful, unsteady. But it was that way. And, I know Cowboy was using the Von Erichs immensely, because the Von Erich television in, Dallas came into Oklahoma on cable. So they had a built in platform to do the Von Erichs. And, it seemed like it worked out pretty good. We used the Von Erich boys a lot until we couldn't depend on them for the reliability. They were good kids. They weren't malicious. They just couldn't handle their booze and their pills.
Larry wants to know, as you're close to a third book, do you think we'll ever see a Vince McMahon autobiography? I don't think so. What do you think?
Well, it's hard to say. I agree that it certainly would be interesting to read and to see how he perceived, how he evaluated his place in history. I'd certainly buy it, read it probably more than once. But I got to believe that someplace down the line, you can almost guarantee there will be a Vince McMahon autobiography. Whether he writes it himself or he has a big hand in it, then that remains to be seen. It's too good a topic for some ambitious author not to take advantage of. So when, I don't know, but if, absolutely it'll happen.
Well, Jim, as folks are listening to this today, it's Thanksgiving. We're winding down the show. I wanted to give you a minute here to just say what you are thankful for. It's something that my family goes around the table and does every Thanksgiving. And although you've been invited 5 years in a row to the Thompson family Thanksgiving, this will be 0-5 for my invites. Go ahead and tell everybody what you're thankful for today on Thanksgiving, Jim.
I'm thankful that you remembered to embarrass me once again on this invite. I would love to spend some Thanksgiving time with your family. I met your family. They're great people. Good old salt of the earth folks. And you know, this year, Conrad, ironically, if my health was better today, I'd certainly want to do everything I could to be at your place. It's just, travel is just, and getting on an airplane. You know, I sent out a tweet the other day that I'm taking some, in going forward, I'm going to be taking some appearances. I got a new guy, and it's on Twitter, the address and all that stuff. So, I'm in a good spot. I just got to get healthy so I can make those flights and come, to their towns and their events. I love doing them. I really do. So, sooner than later, as soon as I get clearance to fly and all that good stuff, we'll be right back where we were. I guarantee it. Because I'm not going to have it any other way. It's my choice to get healthy. It's my decision to get healthy. And that's my goal. Get healthy. You know, blood sugar issues are aside. You know, still got this radiation wound on my ankle, left ankle. It seemed like every day. Today I've got a Zoom call with my cardiologist and so I'm doing all I can to stay on top of it. And I believe that I'm getting better, and my doctors believe I'm getting better. So we'll see. We'll see. I have a lot to be thankful for. I'm alive and I want to stay alive for several more years and enjoy the fruits of my labor. I enjoy going out to these signings and meeting fans. It's a great honor to be in front of them. And I'm going to be doing some more of those sooner than later, Connie. It's just, I look at it as a tremendous, opportunity and a cool deal. So, let's see how quick we can get there.
Well, we're thankful that we had the time with you today, Jim. And we're thankful to all of you for tuning in and checking us out here on Grilling JR. Next week, we're talking all things Christian. Hope you guys enjoy the football and the turkey and the family this week. We'll be back next week right here on Grilling JR with the voice of wrestling, Mr. Jim Ross.
Count your blessings, everybody, and say grace in any form that you choose. But never take for granted your luxuries and the good things that are happening in your life. And if you're healthy, that's a great gift. It's a great gift. So, I appreciate Conrad and Bull Ramus and his whole crew. They helped me through this deal. We had a rough start this morning on the computer. I'd be thankful if I had more knowledge. God dang, it's frustrating sometimes, but in any event, you guys make it happen. And we appreciate that very much, very much.
Well, we appreciate you, Jim, and we'll see you guys next week right here on Grilling JR.
Happy Turkey Day.